Okay, so it's 4 o'clock, so I'd like to call the Budget and Finance Commission meeting for February 21st. I'd like to thank everybody for being here, and also like to welcome Commissioner LeMay to his first meeting.
Yes, sir.
And Ray, will you do roll call, please?
Commissioner Fortunato?
Here.
Commissioner LeMay?
Here.
Vice Chair Leard?
Here.
Commissioner Carr?
Here.
Chair Mason?
Here. Okay, we'll now do the Pledge of Allegiance. Do we have a flag?
It used to be on that wall.
Boy, you threw a curveball.
Imagine.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Well, it doesn't appear that there's a called audience, so we can close that and just move on to the staff liaison report. Mr. Gephardt, please proceed.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just want to again express our welcome to you, Jerry, for joining us today.
Thank
you. For your first meeting. Hope it's a good one. Yeah. And just a few things to hit on and bring you up to speed on this afternoon. Our town manager search is ongoing. I believe our deadline, Mayor could correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe our deadline's next Tuesday for applications to be received, and then council will be reviewing those applications and determining where to go in the process depending on the applicants. Our budget process is ongoing. We had a meeting actually this morning to discuss CIP requests. I don't know. It seems like the last couple of years with COVID and whatever, not to say that it's been easy, not that any budget process is easy, but it seemed like the requests were somewhat muted. Certainly not the case this year. It looks like all gloves are off, and we have received a ton of personnel requests and a ton of capital requests for next year. So looking forward to next year, we're going to have to cull those down a little bit from a funding standpoint and sustainability standpoint, and we've been messaging that. I know Chris Cornelison, the interim town manager, and myself at ELT, we've been messaging that to the troops. So they're aware of the situation we're in, and you know, my message to them is always stay flexible. It's budget season, and we have to live within our means, and thankfully we've got a very strong and tenured group here, especially at the leadership team level, and I have no doubts and concerns that we'll be able to achieve what we need to bring a balanced budget forward to our council, as we always do. And then I guess lastly, one of the big items that hopefully you all have heard, but Oral Valley Church of the Nazarene has been looking at doing some rezoning. I believe that was supposed to be heard at this upcoming council meeting, and that has been deferred and delayed. Again, I don't have any more information than that. The upcoming council meeting on March 1st, it's been deferred. Mayor may have more on that during the council liaison report, but I don't have anything at this point. But stay tuned if you're interested in that issue. So that's been a kind of a big one in our town, and received a lot of attention from the community. So with that concludes my staff liaison report.
Yeah, well, thank you. We can proceed now to item number one. Andre, you read that, please.
Agenda item one, review and approval of the January 17th, 2023 regular session meeting minutes.
Are there any of the commissioners have any questions or comments on the minutes?
No.
Could I have a motion to approve?
Motion to approve.
And a second?
I second the motion.
Okay, so we have it all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? No. So we had Commissioner LeMay with a motion to approve the minutes, seconded by Vice Chair Laird, and no opposed. we can go to the next item. Since we have the update, we want to go on to number three, and we can go to number two afterwards.
Agenda item three, presentation and possible discussion of the town's FY22-23 financial update through December 2022.
Perfect. Do we have a clicker? Ah, perfect. Okay. Thank you. All right. Well, we usually present this, I think, a bit before before council, prior to council, but we actually presented our mid-year at council's budget retreat that they had this last week. So you're getting this kind of after the fact, but we'll go ahead and walk through all the slides for the mid-year financials. We incorporate the three funds that we typically do, which is the General Highway Community Center, but then we also include the town's two enterprise funds, the Water and Stormwater Fund. So this is our kind of disclaimer slide. We've walked through this already. You know, all of our estimates should be considered fluid and subject to change. Our revenues and expenditures are performing quite well compared to budget, but things can and do come up, and so these should be viewed with a grain of salt. We also don't have some of the adjusting auditor's entries that happen at year end that are required in our financials. Several of those do not get incorporated with the monthly update, so just so everybody's aware. All right, we'll start with the general fund and the revenues. Things still looking really nice. Local sales taxes, you can see we are at just under 52% of budget through December. We are expecting to come in at $26.8 million compared to $25.3 million budget. We've had better than expected collections in our contracting sales tax. We did forecast a decrease in construction sales tax this year. But the decrease is not as high as what we had anticipated, so that is a positive there. Retail is also still chugging along. I think we're up 4% year over year through December. Restaurant and bar is still at an increase. I believe that's at 7%. And hotels and remote seller still coming in strong. So overall, local sales tax continues to look well compared to the conservative budget that the town set for the fiscal year. State shared revenues, we've got actuals of $9.2 million now through December compared to $17.6 million, so at 52.3% of budget. We did mention previously that we're expecting to come in quite a bit over on our state sales tax based on the Arizona League's figures. So that is making up the bulk of that positive variance you see for the year-end estimate compared to budget. Charges for services, we are expecting to come in just a bit under budget there. That's due to, we had mentioned the transit fares that have been suspended, as well as we're anticipating some lower swimming pool user fees because the facility's been closed for a couple months for some capital improvements. So that's the variance you see there. Licenses and permits, we are at 70% through December. We are expecting to come in a bit over, and that's due to our revised commercial permit revenue that's tied to specifically the La Posada development project, that large development project that's ongoing right now. But residential continues to look good as well. The grant revenues, we are expecting to come in just a bit over budget in that category, and that's some additional revenue that we're expecting for several departments and some grants that they've secured this fiscal year. And then finally, all other is everything else. That's our intergovernmental revenue, particularly our IGA revenues for transit. It's also our interest income and any other miscellaneous revenues that hit the general fund. That large variance you see there compared to budget, the $2.5, $2.6 million year-end estimate compared to our $2.1 million budget, is a rebate that we're getting from the Arizona Municipal Risk Retention Pool. For positive positive claim trends, so that is that variance you see there. Overall, general fund revenues are at $26.9 million, or 53% of budget through December, and we are expecting to come in about 6%, or $3.1 million over budget at this time. All right, expenditure side of the house for the general fund, things looking positive there too. For personnel, we are at $14.3 million compared to $34.9 million budget, or 41.1% spent thus far. We are expecting to come in about $1 million under budget overall in personnel expenditures, and that's due to a few things, but largely some vacancy savings. We've had positions that have gone vacant during the year and have taken some time to fill. We've also had some positions that were budgeted but have not yet been filled. It's an ongoing process. Still seeing, you know, some challenges depending on the position with filling and hiring. And then we've also had some position, you know, retirements and refills at lower salaries and that kind of thing. We're also looking at some likely PSPRS contribution savings. We've got folks that are entering the PSPRS drop program, and we previously budgeted PSPRS contributions for those folks to help pay down our unfunded liability. Well, that is no longer an issue, and so those savings we're going to start seeing at fiscal year end, those capacity savings. So that's a chunk of the that positive variance you see there. For operations and maintenance, we've mentioned this previously. Our year-end actuals, you can see that overage there. That's tied to the claim settlement payment that was posted this fiscal year for the Nature Preserve, for the Festoso Trails. But overall, we are at about 52.6% of budget spent through December. We've got a little bit of on-call review services included in that year-end estimate, too. That's on-call commercial development review tied to the La Posada project. Capital, we've spent about $162,000, or just under 12% of budget through December. That budget amount, the large chunk of that includes our westward look improvements, but also IT needs and various other equipment and non-CIP operating capital across several departments. The variance you see there for the year-end estimate, we've got, you know, a little under $1.1 million compared to our budget of $1.4 million. That's due to the westward look improvements that are expected to kind of roll over and continue into next fiscal year. And then our transfers out, we've made all of our budgeted transfers for debt service that is owed this fiscal year that the general fund covers, and also one-third of the budgeted transfer to the capital fund. For CIP, so we'll be posting our second transfer in the February financials is when you'll see that number start to rise. So that's what's comprised of the $6.5 million actuals you see there through December. Overall, we've spent in the general fund about $27.2 million, or 42.2% of the budget. We are looking at a favorable budget variance of just under $700,000, or about 1%, and that's really those personnel savings being offset a bit with the O&M overage there, the personnel and capital variance and being washed out with the O&M. All right, and then we'll move on to the chart for the general fund. Through December, you can see revenues up just a bit over last fiscal year, 26.9 compared to 26.1. On the expenditure side, you recall last fiscal year we had our PSPRS, our $10 million PSPRS payment, so that is why expenditures look lower compared to last fiscal year. And you can see 27.2 compared to 31.2. This fiscal year, we did plan to use about $13.8 million in fund balance, but because of the strong revenue performance that we're seeing and some of those personnel vacancies, we're expecting to use about $10.1 million. That's going to bring us to $20.3 million for an ending fund balance, or just over 42% of budgeted expenditures. As a reminder, Council's policy is 30% now, and so that exceeds that policy by just under $6 million, about $5.9. Moving on to the highway fund, nothing really new to report there. We've got our license and permit revenues that are still looking strong. May end up revising those as we progress here. The HERF revenues, I think those started off a little bit slow this fiscal year, but the last couple months have looked a little more positive, so we are still expecting to come in on budget for that category. And then all other, we've mentioned this before, we had a prior year credit from a vendor, so that is reflected in that year-end estimate that you see there compared to budget. Overall, really expecting to come in on budget in the highway fund, with the exception of that vendor refund. So good news there for the highway fund. On the expenditure side, we've got just a few savings here and there. We've got some minor savings expected in personnel for vacancies that have occurred and positions refilled during the fiscal year. You can see we've spent about 45% of budget through December. Operations and maintenance, we have just a little bit of savings forecasted here and there based on what we're seeing, but largely in the highway fund, we tend to spend pretty much 100% of our O&M budget in that fund. You can see capital, we've spent just under $1.1 million through December, or about 40.3% of budget. Our pavement preservation program is obviously the largest expense in there, and that program is ongoing. And then we've also got our La Cañada Mill overlay project, which is expected to exceed budget. And I think we actually did bring that item now. Last week, that item went to council to request contingency for that project. So, and then overall, for a highway fund, we've spent about $1.9 million in expenditures, or about 40.6% of budget. And again, expecting to see just a little bit of O&M savings there in the fund. So that's that positive variance you see there. Here's the chart for the highway fund. Revenue is up just a bit compared to last fiscal year, $2.1 million compared to $1.9. The expenditures are lower at $1.9 million compared to $2.4 million. What's really driving that is the spending of capital in the fund. That's a large chunk of the expenditures in this fund. We did budget to use just under $500,000 of fund balance. Still expecting to use about that amount. We do have, you know, some of those O&M savings in there, and then that vendor refund I mentioned on the revenue side. And then expecting to come in at a fund balance of about $726,000 for the highway fund at year end. All right, we'll move on to the community center fund. Things looking well in that fund, particularly on the revenue side. Our contractor revenues continue to perform strong. Their member dues particularly, but food and beverage looks good as well. They've collected about $2 million, just over $2 million through December, or 51.4% of their budget. They're expecting to come in, you can see, almost $500,000 over budget there, just trending greater than expected, really in all of their categories this year. So that's great news. Our town operating revenues, they started off a little bit slow, but they're looking quite positive now. We've collected about $466,000. That's about 52.5% of our budget through December. And we are seeing, again, good trends there after starting off a little slow. Member dues, daily drop-ins, just really positive all around. And then other revenues is our half-cent sales tax, obviously, but also our HOA contributions. And then interest income and anything miscellaneous in the fund. You can see that overage there. That's due to our strong local sales tax revenues. I mentioned retail, restaurant and bar, remote seller. All of those categories, you know, would get that half cent dedicated to this fund. So things positive there. Overall for the fund, we're already over 50% of budget. And that is prior to going into the spring, you know, which is considered to be pretty strong. So positive there, total of $4.3 million in revenues compared to the budget of $8.5 million. So we are expecting a positive variance of just under $700,000, or 8.1%. That's due to, you know, largely the contracted side, but also the town, some town operating revenues too. All right, any expenditures for the community center fund? Contracted operating, we're at 51.2% of budget, or $2.4 million. They are forecasting some O&M savings there, so expecting to come in just a bit under budget. Nothing too exciting, but we'll take what we can get. The town operating expenditures, we've spent just under 50% through December. We did revise, as we've mentioned last month, the personnel estimates for that area based on our full pay plan implementation. Capital outlay, we've got a robust capital plan for the community center fund this fiscal year. We've spent just under $1 million so far, or 36.8% of budget. We do know that the ADA improvements project is going to carry over into next fiscal year. So that is that variance you see there with the year-end estimate. We have $2.1 million compared to $2.6, $2.7 million, which was budgeted. The transfers out here consist of debt service, which we have posted that transfer already. And then we have some excess fund balance. Per council direction, we are dedicating a transfer to the capital fund to cover some of the golf course irrigation project. And that transfer will be equal to whatever's needed to leave about $1 million in the community center fund at the end of the fiscal year. So that is that difference you see there. You can see the year-end estimate of $5.5 million, which does incorporate that additional amount.
Question for you. Mm-hmm. Define ADA for me, please.
American Disability Act. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah, some ADA and handicap improvements. All right, in total community center fund expenditures, we've spent about $6.3 million in this fund, or 47.6% through December. We are expecting, again, to see that budget variance for transfers out, just under $900,000 of variance, and that's due to being able to transfer a bit more to that project per council direction to leave the fund balance in the community center fund at $1 million at the end of the fiscal year. Here's the chart for the Community Center Fund. Revenues up just a bit compared to last fiscal year, $4.3 million compared to $4.1 million. And then the expenditures, $6.3 million compared to $3 million. That is the large transfer out now that we're doing to debt service for the new Parks and Rec bonds. That's that big jump that you see there. We did plan to use fund balance in the fund of about $4.7 million. Expecting to use a bit more, $4.9 million, for that additional transfer out. And that would land us, again, as I've mentioned, at a fund balance of about $1 million at the end of the year. All right, and then last but not least, we'll cover the two enterprise funds. First, the water fund. Revenues are trending slightly below budget. That's due to lower water usage. So we've got 49.2% collected through December, or $7.6 million. You can see there we've got, you know, the additional rain and then some corresponding declines in usage. So those are expected to come in about 2.5%, or just under $400,000 below budget at the end of the year. Charges for services are also expected to come in a bit below budget, about $124,000 specifically below budget, or that's just under 4%. That's due to some waived fees and shut-off fees that the utility did while they were transitioning to a new software system. So that occurred this fiscal year. And then we also have our transfer in of some ARPA funds for some projects that the water utility is doing. We've got that pinned at $2.3 million for the current fiscal year. We did budget the amount of $5.4 million, which reflects the full amount of our restricted ARPA dollars, but the water portion specifically may look more like 2.3 as we're starting to outline and finalize those projects. The expenses for the water fund are trending as we would expect through December. We spent about $10.3 million in the fund, or 49.7% of budget. We are looking to have some personnel and O&M savings at the end of the fiscal year, so expecting to come in about 3% below budget by year end for those areas. And then last but not least, the Stormwater Fund. Our revenues are totaling about $727,000 through December, or 48.7% of budget. Expecting to come in about on budget. They've got just a bit of a variance there, $30,000 or 2% below for the stormwater utility revenues. And then the expenses, we are expecting to come in quite a bit under budget there. The bulk of that is due to our Sierra Wash project. We are expecting to see quite a bit of variance there based on what we have so far. So that is the capital variance you see there at the year end of about $262,000. And with that, we'll take any questions you may have here.
Thank you, Mindy. Mm-hmm. Does anyone, any commissioners have questions?
Just one question. I don't see the one issue that really got my attention was the pension funding for the police and other officers. I don't see that covered in your budget.
Where specifically are you?
All right, well, let's start at page 9 of the input. that the agenda that we received?
Oh, okay. You're on a different item.
Yeah, you're on the agenda.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
No, we'll
okay. That'll be the next time.
Oh, okay.
That'll be the
next time. Yep. Thank you. Okay.
Any other questions?
I have. You had mentioned that the town council was looking at the overage of a couple of capital projects, the one for the overlay, and then one for, I believe,
I think Westward Look was the other one.
Mm-hmm. Was it approved by the council?
Yes, it was. Yes.
And that money is now.
Yeah, so we'll do a budget. We'll do a budget reallocation out of contingency to fill in that shortfall. So contingency is basically a budgetary number that we include to cover for any unplanned or unexpected events that may arise. In this case, it was a bid that came in over what we expected it to, and so council approved that at the last council meeting, and so we'll do that reallocation, move those monies out of the contingency bucket into the appropriate lines where they'll be spent.
Okay, are we aware of any other contingency overages?
Not at this point, yeah. Okay. We try not to, Mr. Fortunato, we try not to dip into that contingency bucket unless we really feel like we need to. And when we bring these requests to council, we try to capture them all when we are aware of them. Typically, we'll wait towards the latter half of the fiscal year, just because we kind of want to see what other projects come in under budget, whether there's some capacity shifting that can occur there, or whether a project that looks like it's going to go over budget actually, you know, slows down, there's some kind of delay or whatever, and we won't end up going over budget. So, but in this case, we were fairly confident with those two projects that we had the live bids and that they were going to land over budget. We're not aware of any other concerns like that.
You said you've been inundated for next year's budget.
Yes.
Are projects with a fixed contingency, or is this something that's established based on a volume or a dollar amount?
Yeah, so Mr. Chair, Commissioner Fortunato, so there's a couple things that happen during budget season. One is we have kind of the overall bucket of contingency per fund that, you know, typically, historically over the last couple, 2 or 3 years, we've been budgeting about $5 million in the general fund. We actually included and loaded in $5 million in the capital fund as well because we knew with inflation and so forth, with some of the capital projects, that was going to be probably a good idea. There's also budgeted contingency within the projects at the line level, oftentimes that occurs as well. And so typically our directors will take a look at that, and they'll load in, you know, like an additional 10% to cover, you know, change orders or unexpected things that may arise in the projects that they're managing. But I think this year, specifically this budget year, what we tried to do was keep a very lean capital budget. We already had a pretty large townwide budget as a whole. And so so that was kind of direction that we were getting from council members, was that they were looking for something a little bit leaner. So we tried to scale that back a little bit, and that caused us to, you know, to actually, again, kind of take a look at, because this is, I don't know, Wendy has more experience with the town here than I do, but typically we have not necessarily had like loaded in a contingency in our capital fund, especially a $5 million contingency. I think typically it's been more relegated to the general fund for operational needs, but this year we did kind of handle that a little bit differently, just to try to make sure that we were covered there from a budgetary standpoint and that we weren't going to run into any challenges. So,
and if the contingency fund is not used, I mean, when I was in operations, how much do I have? Oh, I can, you
right.
know, you spend as much as you could. I mean, what happens to that money? And do we compare line items to finished projects at cost and look at where the overalls
are? Should we put this on another item for the future?
No, I mean, I think I'll just handle this. Yeah, it's fine. Mr. Chair, Commissioner Fortunato. So, yeah, so if the contingency line is not used, then it just, those monies, just stay within the fund as reserves. So they're just reserves that are specifically called out, at, budgeted as a contingency, and then if they're not used, they just stay in that fund as a reserve moving forward.
Okay.
Yeah. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. Those are not just abused.
I mean, yeah, abused. It's not a slush fund.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Just a couple. I know the transit fees. Do you guys have any idea? Are we waiting for the city of Tucson to say yes, and then all the law start? I know I heard something on the news around back.
Yeah.
Are you expecting those to start this fiscal year? Or?
Chair Mason, I probably don't have as up to date information on that, but that is what we're doing. We're basically just kind of stepping back and, you know, just wanting to fall in line with with whatever is decided there. So we'll see. I think the last rumblings I heard was they were looking at maybe permanently doing away with those fees, but I'm not privy to how the city would cover that shortfall. I did hear rumors of that. So, but no, we're just kind of, you know, holding back and seeing what happens on that end and then going from there.
I follow up on that question. Decided by who? Pima County?
I think it would be the RTA and the city, from what I understand.
Is it City of Tucson?
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's correct.
So inform me, the City of Tucson mm-hmm. controls transportation for Pima County or what?
The RTA is the overall agency, and then City of Tucson's in it, this county. There's a lot of people that use transit services that have a kind of a part of it too, but RTA has a budget on all types of transportation type projects, and they kind of the overall control of the transit system, although City of Tucson is the big dog, I guess, in it, because they used to run it by themselves, and now it's kind of expanded to a more
to the extent of Pima County,
right,
all of Pima County.
It's all of Pima County. The RTA is like a district in itself, which controls this part, so everybody has input and stuff like that to it.
Okay, thank
kind
you.
Of a brief, I guess.
Thank you. I understand.
I don't remember, but on retirements, do you have lump sum payouts of annual leave and sick leave if they have accumulated enough balance? So mm-hmm.
We do, yes, Chair Mason. So when people leave, they receive all of their vacation balance. And then sick leave is, I don't know if you want the specifics on that, but it's half. Okay, it's over a certain amount. So okay. You have to have a pretty sizable sick leave balance before any of it's paid out.
And you just that's never really budgeted. It just occurs whenever it happens.
That's right.
So you have to basically take the hit.
That's right. It occurs whenever that happens. And we usually are able to cover that, you know, with vacancy savings and other savings that we see in the department. So it hasn't usually been an issue. I know, you know, with maybe larger retirements, that may be something that we would need to look at. But it's not something that we've had to specifically budget for. We've been able to cover it.
So this will be your first year with the pay plan in effect for the whole fiscal year. So you'll get a good look to see what that impact's gonna be.
Yes, that's correct.
Which you probably already know.
We do already have a pretty good sense of what that is, because we've already modeled everything out for next fiscal year, so. Mm-hmm.
Now, I was looking, you had talked about water usage with the water. Now that the irrigation project is through, I mean, it has been through very long, but are they seeing any positive trends, if any, right now, or just too soon?
The golf course irrigation?
Right.
I'm not sure. That's a good question. We can ask their director and
sure,
see if they've got some information on that. Have you heard anything on that?
Yeah, no, I haven't.
Let's see what we can find out for you.
Okay, thanks. Yeah. For the charge for services, what percentage of those are park fees? Does it make up half about?
Oh, for the general fund?
In the general fund.
Let's see. I have the detail here. I know they are a sizable portion, But we also have what are called admin service charges in that category, and those are charge outs to the enterprise funds. So those make up a pretty good chunk of charges for services too. But the park stuff is specifically their swimming pools, their field and court rentals, and then their user fees. So 5, 6, 7. I mean, it looks like it's maybe close to a third of the budget for charges for services in the general fund.
So yeah. Does the admin fee about another third or so of it?
Admin fees is more than that, actually. It's a little over half.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And looking at the general fund, based on your year-end estimates and expenditures, you got three departments that, you know, I know it's early, but are basically are exceeding budget right now based on estimates here. Now, if that continues then close to the end of the fiscal year, will you try to move budget capacity around within the general fund to kind of relieve that, or what would you tend to do? And I notice in your financials you always have that one comment in the note, which seems just kind of unusual to me, but just what would be your policy in dealing with that? You know, if would you try to fix this by the end of the fiscal year, or would you just leave it? And does mayor and council have to approve that this excess or exceeding budget? Because within the general fund, you do it by department. Mm-hmm. So if it exceeds it by the department and you leave it that way, or you don't adjust it through moving capacity around, does mayor and council then say, okay, that's okay to do that, and you leave it that way? Is that kind of what you do? Or?
Yeah, so I think I'll field that question. So, Chair Mason, so what we typically have done is not do any contingency reallocations. And the challenge here is that, and I'm sure you're aware because you have experience here, so the challenge here is that as you get closer to year end, it can appear that you're actually under budget, but then you accrue that last payroll of the year or whatever, which happens after year end, and then all of a sudden, boom, all of a sudden you're, and so that the timing of it becomes, is a little bit problematic. I think the departments that you're referencing, I think as I look at this, really the one that that I would be most concerned about, I guess, would be probably town court, and then also GNA, which is those are kind of the ones that are, you know, that look like they're pretty solidly over budget midway through the year. So the other ones I probably wouldn't touch, but I, you know, we'll have to see how we progress through this fiscal year. I mean, this is kind of something that. That as we get closer to year end and whatever, that may be something that we would propose a contingency reallocation from council on in June, just to try to make sure that we've got adequate coverage there. But in terms of our financial statements are submitted to the Arizona Auditor General's office on an annual basis, and they're tasked with reviewing budget to actuals, making sure that we're staying in compliance with Arizona local budget law, and we have not received any concerns from them that there are problems there. So
yeah, 'cause this level would be more of your policy, local policy, because you know you say general fund we do our limits by department, everybody else by fund. So technically, from a lower level.
Yeah, and actually, so if you go back and review, Chair Mason, if you go back and review prior financial statements, when we switched auditors and went to Henry and Horn last year, they actually recommended that we report at that lower level, at the department level of detail. We actually, prior to that, had reported more of at a category level, meaning personnel, operations and maintenance, capital, and so forth. Which gave us a little bit more latitude and leniency there when we were comparing budget to actuals, because you could kind of blend, if one department was over and another was under, you could kind of blend that all together and you could still be under budget. They actually recommended, made the recommendation to report at the department level because of the budgetary, you know, statutes in Arizona. They just thought that that was, you know, we're talking really specifically what's considered called the legal level of budgetary control. And that's the technical term for it. And basically they thought that that was, you know, that that was a recommendation that, that we needed to take seriously, and we did, to be able to demonstrate that we were complying with Arizona law. So so that's really what happened there, and probably more detail than you're asking for, but we're going to keep a closer eye on this moving forward, just because we don't want to run afoul of anything and cause any bells and whistles to go off at the state level, for sure.
Well, even at the community center fund, for total expenditures, it looks like you, and I know, again, is this handle going to be, because you're at the fund level now for mm-hmm. this one.
Yeah.
So would you do the same thing there? I mean, I don't know if your transfer outs will, you know, I guess you're predicting them to be.
Yeah,
that's
so
kind of the one that's kind of
right. So, Chair Mason, member of the commission. So this one's a little bit different because it is a transfer and not technically mm-hmm. an expenditure. Right. And I know we in the presentation we kind of blend those all together, right. So it can be a bit confusing. But a transfer is not technically right. considered an expenditure. So because you're moving funds from one fund to another fund and really keeping it within the overall confines of the town. So so that one again. You know, I don't know that we'd have any issues there or challenges or whatever, because I think the transfer line, that's the specific line that's causing that to look a little bit different. And, you know, and then in that case, we are really complying with council directive on that issue. So,
okay. That's all I have. Any other questions on this particular item? Okay. We'll move on to would be item 2 on the agenda.
Agenda item 2, presentation and discussion of PSPRS pension funding and related pension funding policy.
Ms. Patsy, switch my. I guess you get the honor date.
Yep. Give us just a sec while we change presentations here. Yeah, that's not actually the presentation.
That's a real interesting one.
So, I apologize, it's not in the PowerPoint, it's kind of more PDF, so it's going to be a little trickier, but it'll be fine. So, I wanted to update the commission on our PSPRS plan and how we're doing. This all really leads into a discussion of our pension funding policy, which, according to Arizona law, needs to be updated on an annual basis. So, hopefully, and we don't have to get into the pension funding policy at this meeting, although you certainly are able to, or, you know, welcome to if you want to, but really, this is hopefully laying a foundation for you for the discussions that we have in future meetings where we actually do look at the policy and kind of make a recommendation to town council for approval of that policy for next fiscal year. So, I've kind of, you know, I know some of you are kind of new to PSPRS and whatnot, because we have a few new members on the commission this year. But this is basically the pension funding equation that you really have to have a strong grasp of. And it's not really all that complicated. Basically, you have inputs on the left side, which are contributions and investment income. Those are the inputs into the plan. And then you have the outputs on the right side, which are the benefits and the expenses. Now, the benefits are the big dog. That's, you know, those are the large costs. The expenses, the plan expenses, typically are pretty muted and minimal in comparison to the benefits. The benefits are what retirees are actually paid. So so to stay balanced, or to have a healthy plan moving forward, obviously your contributions and your investment income really need to equal or exceed your benefits or your expenses. I mean, it's like anything else. Your inputs have to equal or exceed your outputs, otherwise you're going to run into a structural deficit. It's a deficit situation, and you're going to have to make that up in some way or form or fashion. Some people think that that can be made up with increased investment earnings or investment income in the plan moving forward. I think that's a risky proposition, which we'll see in a few slides. And typically what you've seen is where plans have been underfunded for whatever reason, or benefits have been more than what has been called for contributions, and investment income hasn't really kept up. That just causes challenges because you have to make that up in some form or fashion. If it's not made up in investment income because markets are down or you're in a recession or whatever, then it just causes you to have to contribute more. That's really the only funding source. And then that causes rates to go up, which starts squeezing municipal budgets. And that's really been the situation, not just this town has been in, but really all plan participants have been in statewide with PSPRS.
Nationwide, mm-hmm. for that matter.
And nationwide, for that matter, mm-hmm. That's correct. So, okay, so this slide really kind of highlights where we were. And this, Clark Partridge from PSPRS actually did this presentation to the commission and to council last year. And so this slide was a slide that he provided, and it really highlighted where the town stood last year when we were, again, looking at updating the pension funding policy. We had a certain amount of assets here, which is represented in the top green box, top green box there. We had a liability, an actuarial accrued liability that was calculated by our actuaries that basically calculated our liability as of a certain point in time based upon prior retirees, and then also current employees, current participants in the plan. And then we had the present value of future benefits, which is basically that actuarial accrued liability plus future benefits that are anticipated to be paid out in time from the current employee base. And so so our assets were not keeping up with our actuarial accrued liability. We had a shortfall there, which then needed to be amortized over a certain period. The plan and the state really said, we think the target ought to be, I believe, 2036 is when we think this thing ought to be completely, completely solved, this problem. And so that was basically a 15 year amortization period, where that was added on to the normal, the normal cost contribution component that the normal cost really represents the future value of benefits that are needed if you were fully funded. So we have the normal cost, and we have this unfunded actuarial liability that's amortized, which was driving up and spiking the town's pension costs as a whole. So this next slide here, I apologize, I don't know if I can increase the...
Yeah, the arrows.
Let me try to make this a little bit larger. Okay, there we go.
Nice.
Nice. Okay. So this slide really, again, from a historical standpoint, really shows where the town has been. And we started off back in 2009, and that... So what we have represented here are the assets in the blue box, the liabilities in the orange box, and then the unfunded, the difference between those two, in the gray box. And so you see back in 2009, we were a little bit underfunded, or not underfunded, but we didn't have enough assets to cover our liabilities. And so we had a little bit of an unfunded liability, and there wasn't really, no one's attention was really drawn by this because it was kind of viewed as somewhat normal in pension plans, especially public pensions, to not be fully funded. And again, with such a small unfunded liability, there was this sense and the thought that, okay, maybe investment earnings might be able to help us dig out of this hole a little bit, and it will kind of correct itself over time. Unfortunately, what happened was, and I don't want to get into too much detail because there's a lot here, but what happened was that, you know, you can see it, the liabilities just kept growing, and yeah, the assets kept growing, but they weren't keeping pace. And so what you saw was really in 2015, or actually 2016, 17, 18, and 19, you really saw this spiking up of that unfunded liability. The investment income, the investment returns in the plan just were not able to keep pace. And so so the liabilities kept growing at a faster pace, basically, than the assets, which caused, that did start causing some bells and whistles going off, and council wanted to look at this issue and really study it, and so study what options were available. And so we took a look at it as staff, brought in a consultant to calculate some different investment earnings assumptions and run some different scenarios and kind of model this out, what this looks like moving forward in the future. And we made the decision, and the council, the consultant provided the detail and the information, the data, and then staff made the recommendation, which council approved, of making a $10 million reserve payment in fiscal year 22, and then also filling in the difference there, because we had about a $27.6 million shortfall at that point in time, filling in that difference, that gap, with a pension obligation bond issuance, which rates were very favorable. We were able to issue $17.6 million at about 2.39% all in cost, you know, with everything, all in cost of issuance over that 15-year time frame. So that's really what you see here, is really the history of what's going on, the liabilities outpacing our assets, us seeing this problem. We're just digging that hole deeper and deeper. We need kind of a solution, and so we funded that solution with a combination of reserves and a pension obligation bond issuance. And so for fiscal year 22, you see that asset box really jumps up there and fully covers what the liabilities are. And we actually have a net pension asset, not a net pension liability, as of fiscal year, as of 22, June 30, 2022. Again, this chart really kind of shows the impacts of that from a rate standpoint. So if you go back to 2015, our employer rate was a little less than 20%. Fast forward to 2022, 2023, it had more than doubled. It was up 43%. And we weren't confident. In fact, we were pretty confident that that was only going to get worse. It was only going to be exacerbated. Well, that's what our model showed, was that this rate was going to continue to climb and escalate, which the employer rate is important because that just eats into the operating budget of the town. We have to fund that in some form or fashion, which then could have an issue on the level of services that the town provides to its residents. So this was definitely something that we were looking for a solution for. Again, looking at, and we'll look at the report in just a second, but you see the impact that the solution had with the reserves and the pension obligation bond issuance. It dropped our rate from 43% down to 11%, which is essentially that normal cost rate. So essentially moving forward, what the actuary said is, okay, you have enough to fund your benefits and the costs of the plan moving forward at just with the normal cost rate. You are now back in a stable situation from a pension funding standpoint. Now, and we'll talk about our policy moving forward again, but what our policy says, if you read it, and it's been attached in your packet, is we're actually not dialing back our pension contributions, our rate, the rate that we're paying. We're not dialing that back until we actually hit 110% funded. So we want some real solid cushion there because we don't know what types of assumptions either the plan makes or investment, we don't have a We don't have strong confidence that investment performance is going to keep up with what it needs to be. And so we just want to make sure that we don't find ourselves in this situation again moving forward. So that's what's going on there. This is out of the actuarial report. Again, it's been attached in your packet this afternoon. This report is kind of the, you know, there's a lot of good information in there. This one kind of summarizes some of the things I've been talking about. So this is a comparative report of fiscal year 21 versus fiscal year 22. Here you see the actuarial present value of benefits. It increases slightly. I believe that's like 3.5 million or something. Anyways, increases slightly from 81.2 to almost 85 million. The actuarial accrued liability goes up quite a bit more from almost 70.8 million to 76.5 million. But then you see the actuarial value of assets. Try saying that five times fast. It goes from about 46.8 million up to $78 million. So with our, just to give you a sense here, we funded the plan with about 27.6 million in combination of debt and reserves, and we went up about 31 million in the actual value of assets. So that really helped us out. Again, here you see what that liability was. The 24 million really represents tier one and tier two police. That's the report we're looking at. There's some court that we also are dealing with. So total liability was about 27.6. But you see here the liability went from 24 million on this report down to actually an asset of about $1.5 million. So that's good news. These are just ratios down at the bottom. So we were at 66.1%. This is kind of the key ratio that people look at when they look at pension plans, is the actuarial accrued liability funded ratio. And we were at 66.1%. And that included a historical return in 2021 of 27.6% on the plan, which we knew was not going to be replicated anytime soon because it had never happened before. So that brought us up to 66%, even with that historical return. Now you look at it, and we're at 102% funded as of June 30th, 2022, again, with us not ratcheting down our contributions on a percentage basis, our total contributions, until we hit that 110% threshold there. That's what our current policy calls for. This slide, again, kind of summarizes that, what I really wanted to highlight here, I don't want to talk about what I just talked about, but what I really want to highlight here is just this cushion, this risk mitigation. So what we're comparing here is the actuarial value of assets and then also the market value of assets with this accrued actuarial liability. We have about $1.5 million of cushion, which isn't great. The market value of assets, we're actually still a little bit negative, about $500,000 negative there with the market value. Now, what the plan does, just to kind of clarify what's going on here, the plan actually smooths their returns, their investment performance over 7 years, because they don't want significant volatility. And you'll see it here. Again, we had in fiscal year 21, we had a historic year in returns of about 27.8%. Well, this last fiscal year, we had negative 4%. So you can see that is a massive swing in returns, and to kind of protect employers and the public, because the public is ultimately footing this bill, they smooth the returns over a seven-year time horizon, just to kind of keep things at an even keel and kind of keep employer rates more stable. Yes, Jerry?
A question on that slide, that's 2.5 years old. How are we doing right now?
Which slide? This one here? Or
the one you just showed.
He's looking at it as of June 30th.
7/6/21. Oh, it was added right there.
Oh, that was the contribution here that was right. Made. So that was the 27.6 that we contributed. Right. This is actually June 30th, 22. This is information out of the most recent actuarial report, which has been attached. So. Okay. Again, this is really kind of comparing 22, the most recent numbers with, you know, it's basically comparing our liability with the actual value of assets and market value of assets. And then down here, I want to highlight this as well. So our contribution rate for next fiscal year 24, again, it's that normal cost rate. It's at 11%. And you see that that's been really pretty stable. That's earlier slide shows that that normal cost rate here in the orange has stayed pretty consistent over time. It's actually declined a little bit. So that 11%, the difference between that normal cost rate and that amortization, that higher rate that we've been paying, is about $2 million. So it's real money, it's significant money, and if we can kind of get up to that 110% funding threshold, per the current policy, that saves us, saves the town, saves our residents about $2 million ongoing savings year over year. Assuming, again, that there's no changes in assumptions, and there's a lot of assumptions that underlie this data. So, you know, mortality assumptions, investment earnings assumptions, and stuff like that are really driving this.
So it's $2 million a year savings less the loan that we're paying back, right?
Yeah, so correct. So that's a good point. So Mr. Chair, Commissioner Fortunato, so the ongoing savings net is about $750,000 year over year. That's correct. Because the pension payment, both principal and interest, is about 1.25, 1.27. It's in that range, depending on the year. So you subtract that from the $2 million, and that's the true savings for the town moving forward. Correct.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this slide really highlights the performance, both this last year, but also looking at the 3, 5, 7, and 10-year performance. And this is really right off the, you can, you know, go look at this. This is right off the PSPRS website. So the plan, you know, one of their key assumptions that they make is that the plan is going to earn at least 7.3% year over year into, you know, in perpetuity. And that's actually down. That number was a couple years ago was 7.5%. They've been dialing it back, ratcheting it back, because if you look at you know, years 5 and year 7 specifically, and again they do a 7-year smoothing of these returns, those didn't quite hit that 7.3%. And even in the 10-year, they were just barely over 7.4, which was, again, that's under the 7.5 that was, that it used to be. So they had, you know, the 27.8 that they had in fiscal year 21, that return will certainly help. The minus 4% certainly won't, you know, moving forward. So they'll blend those together and recalculate this in fiscal year, this current fiscal year in June 30th, 2023, and we'll see how that all kind of filters out moving forward.
Do you know
impact
where
we are
year to date?
I don't know where they're at year to date.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I know what I can tell you is just as I follow the markets and investment returns, it shouldn't be as poor of a year as last fiscal year. Last fiscal year was just really challenging, both in terms of the fixed. You know, there was no place to hide. There was no shelter. Usually when the markets are down, fixed incomes are up. Last year, the markets were down, and fixed income was down as well. It was just a very challenging year. This year, we kind of started off the year in a challenging environment, but you know, over the last couple months, things have kind of recovered a little bit. So we'll see how things you know, how things turn out the rest of this year. Obviously, there's a few months left in it. So,
have we ever had multiple negative years?
That's a good question. I could go back and I've got the history. I could go back and look. I don't know offhand, but I'm sure there.
The city to respond.
Yeah, I'm sure it's happened, but then again, I don't. Maybe in the Great Recession, there may have been a couple years back to back.
2008, 2009.
Yeah, but I'd have to go back and look. I could look at that.
Year, 7 year history of investment returns from you based on actuarial value. If you do that from 10 to 19, that was kind of that's I'm sure it went down in those years.
Yeah, so the assumed earnings rate, that's, again, kind of a key assumption that the plan makes moving forward, that's what their investment portfolio will earn. If they dial that back down further, there's only, again, going back to that equation at the beginning, there's only really one place where that can be made up, and that's in contributions, because your two inputs are investment earnings and contributions. So if investment earnings, if your assumed earnings rate declines, if there's a change in that assumption, it really has a pretty significant impact on your contributions moving forward. So again, that's where we want to have some cushion there in our plan, that we're protected in case the plan decides to change that assumed earnings rate moving forward, because that could change the calculus of our funding level. So this slide should look familiar. We saw it earlier, but it's been updated really to show where we currently, or as of June 30th, 2022, stand. This blue arrow kind of shows roughly, again, just kind of an estimate of where we were funded before, as of June 30th, 2021. The second blue arrow here shows where we're funded currently, again, just a little bit overfunded by about 2%. And again, this normal cost component, as long as we keep contributing that 11%, that ought to fund the present value of the future benefits along with the investment earnings. Again, assuming that investments earn what their assumed earnings rate is, that ought to fund, the combination of those two, ought to fund the present value of our future benefits as well. So that's really what the goal is, was to get kind of caught up with our funding there, so that the town was not in a situation where it was continually behind and the hole getting deeper and deeper. And with that, that concludes my presentation this afternoon, and I'd be happy to entertain any questions that the commission has.
Does anybody have any questions?
Well, yes. just a comment. I, reading through the material, I was attracted to this entire issue of how the pensions and benefit were being funded by our city, and I'm happy to see that we are better than 100% funded. Over the last 15 years, there have been cities, counties, entire states that have suffered underfunded or unfunded pension liabilities. Mm-hmm. So I want Oro Valley to be a place where we are 100% or even better funded for our employees.
Thank you.
Do we know a threshold if we maintain a zero or another year of negative four investments in which the city needs to start contributing or adding to the 11%?
So Mr. Chair, Commissioner Fortunato, so the town is currently contributing about 43% still. It isn't, yeah, even though the 11% is recommended by the actuaries, the town has not dialed back its contribution, because that's what the policy dictates. So again, we're really trying to get out in front of this issue and make sure that it never becomes an issue again. So that policy, again, that's been included in your packet. I would encourage all of you to really review that and try to understand it. If you have questions, please don't hesitate to reach out, because this is important. When we had the consultant come in, I had them model, just to give you a sense, I had them model everything, I had them model it at 7.3. But I based everything in our model on 5.3%, because we just wanted to be, we've always taken very conservative approaches and stances here in the town, and we wanted to be very conservative on this issue as well. And as I modeled those, it was really ugly. So you know, we really, again, we just really wanted to make sure that we were being being diligent about this, and we feel like we're in a good spot, but we're not done. I think that's the story. There's still work to do, but this is important for you to, again, kind of understand. I just want to lay this foundation. It's important for you all to understand this, so that as you read the policy and then kind of think about where we want to go from here. I think it's a very, you know, the policy that we have is a strong policy. It does need to be updated, but your input will be critical and important to making a recommendation to council, again, for their final adoption and approval moving forward. Any other questions?
Go ahead. May I? Sorry.
Sure. Yeah.
I thought this was a fantastic presentation, and I thought your auditors did an excellent job of breaking down the two different funds. It was a little bit like burying the lead or like reading a scary novel to have the pension fund policy at the very end. You know, that would have been, I was going through here going, these numbers, 43% for contributions, that seems rather high. So the only thing that I was kind of just curious about and maybe missing was forecasting based upon the current contributions, personnel currently, and also as the town grows, what your personnel might look like as well if you're increasing your police department, for example, or municipal services, and what those variables look like, maybe even like a range of variables, because I know that's so difficult when you get out to like 5-10 years,
right.
But my question is, like, how does that, do you have the ability to do that forecasting and share that? And when you're doing the budgeting process and departments are coming to you and asking for more employees, how does that long-term liability of those employees factor to that process? I guess it's a lot of questions.
Yeah, so those are great questions. So so first off, I'll say there is a model, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, there is a model that the plan, actually, the actuaries, so these are not our auditors, they're our actuaries, so I just want to clarify that. So these actuaries are employed or contracted by the plan hires them to do these reports and calculations for all of the plan participants, you know, counties, the state government, and all the various fire districts and so forth. So. So they actually do these calculations, and they actually have a model that we can utilize that gets updated as well, because this is such a big issue statewide that they decide to make this model available to cities, towns, counties. Again, the state can utilize it. So I haven't seen whether that model has been updated for this current actuarial evaluation. Usually there's a little bit of a lag, and I think they usually push it out historically over the last couple of years because it's fairly recent. It's been pushed out sometime around April or May even, where they update the model for, you know, for the most recent year. And I know that seems a like a lag and delay, but they're, again, they're producing a lot of reports and calculations for a lot of different municipalities and governments. So when we get that model, I can certainly, and I'll inquire of the plan and see if we can't get that spooled up for the next meeting, if it's available, or the next, you know, the meeting after that, hopefully. So there is a model out there that we can model this. More information than you need, but when I was modeling this at 5.3% over time, our contribution rate was exceeding 100%. Our employer rate. So it was, like I said, this was real stuff. So the second part of your question was
budgeting. Personnel.
Yeah. So again, this kind of goes into some of the. There's a lot of assumptions that are made by the actuaries. One of the assumptions that they make is personnel is payroll growth, the payroll growth assumption. So that assumption historically had been about 3%. They are they're moving that down, ratcheting it down in these actuarial valuations by 0.5% per year, I believe, to hopefully get it down to about 0%. If the issue here is if you were over 3%, and that assumption, then that actually had a benefit to you on your actuarial accrued liability. If you were less than 3%, then you weren't funding it appropriately, and that actually caused your liability to increase. So so both that pension, that has an impact. The other thing I want to point out here is, in terms of new personnel, the spigot has kind of been shut off here with Tier 1 and Tier 2, which is really what this presentation primarily dealt with. All new employees are now considered Tier 3, and their benefits aren't as rich, number one. Number two, because the spigot's been, you know, there were certain things with Tier 1 and Tier 2 that were causing this issue that that also have been resolved, but they really significantly contribute to that liability growth. And one of them is the permanent benefit increase was really driving this in a significant way. And that permanent benefit increase issue also has been resolved really at the legislative level. So that issue, both Tier 1 and Tier 2, you can't, if you're a new employee, you can't go into the Tier 1 and Tier 2. You're going to be Tier 3. Your benefits aren't going to be as rich, and you're not going to have the permanent benefit increases that Tier 1 specifically, but also some Tier 2 employees had, which were causing this challenge. So I think moving
to the pipelines.
Yeah, I think moving forward, moving forward, we shouldn't have, you know, they have the funding ratios for Tier 3. I think we're sitting in pretty good shape. I could just look. I've got the report here as well. Look at that. But Tier 3 really doesn't have the issue. It's Tier 1 and Tier 2 that really have the issue.
I think there was just something in the report where there was like a little blip that said that the Tier 3 would stabilize as the population continues to grow. And I was just like, I wonder when that is. Like, how much of the population has to grow before it stabilizes, and when does that happen?
Yeah, and, you know, Tier 3, again, if I'm looking at this, it's on page...
it's page 3...
Page 10. It's actually page 10 of the actuarial report. The actuarial accrued liability funding ratio for Tier 3 was 212%. So Tier 3 is really well overfunded. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we're not able to shift some of those monies into Tier 1 and Tier 2. But we really don't have the issue with Tier 3 that we have with Tier 1 and 2. You know, we'll continue to monitor this, again, Tier 3 moving forward, see how that performs in relation to the actuarial assumptions that are utilized there. But this is really primarily a Tier 1, Tier 2 issue that we've been trying to deal with.
Well, I would, excuse me, I kind of jumped the gun with my questions earlier in the meeting, but I would like to see this added as a agenda item right up front.
Okay.
When he was giving your report.
Yeah. Any other questions?
I actually have one. So it kind of deals with you talking about Tier 1 and Tier 2. So I'm just curious, obviously reading through it, Tier 1, Tier 2, both on the police and the dispatcher side, says minimum 10 years for dispatcher, 15, and then a max payout of 80%.
Mm-hmm.
Is that normal? Is that in line with other municipalities? Or, as you're saying, was it rich, and that's why we're backing it out on Tier 3?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. So, Mr. Chair, Commissioner Carr, basically what we saw there was that that permanent benefit increase that we saw, and basically what was happening there is if the plan performance exceeded a certain, I think it was if it exceeded the assumed earnings rate, that 7.5% is what it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
If it exceeded that, then that triggered a permanent benefit increase for all current retirees. And so that just started ballooning and mm-hmm. compounding on each other. The plan had to switch actuaries because of that issue as well, because I don't think it was really being properly calculated or reported on, or included in future or current or future rates, which caused the underfunding situation. I think that issue has been largely resolved. So I think it was really kind of a combination of, you know, there wasn't that one party was at fault. There were multiple parties that were at fault on this issue that kind of landed us in the situation that we were in. And but I think, you know, by and large, a lot of these issues, again, moving forward, have been resolved. And I don't, you know, I think, going back to your question, I think when you look at public safety typically always has richer benefits than civilian. Okay. So I think that's kind of a normal thing that you see, but when you look at, you know, they've had to kind of rejig this again a little bit to get more in line with what you see on the civilian side, and that's where you know, tier three came into play, where the benefits were not, you know, quite as rich because they just weren't sustainable. It was causing too much of an impact on employer rates across the state.
Okay. So. Yeah, that's why I asked, because I'm used to private industry rates, and 80% seems very, very high for income replacement, considering all things. So I wasn't sure if that was just because it's government.
Yeah.
Or if it was just Ore Valley.
Yeah, I think to get to the 80% threshold in ASRS, I think you need literally about 30 years of service.
Okay.
Versus in PSPRS, it was 20 years. So if you started at age 20 or 18, or which a lot of people in public, you know, people in public safety do, they start, you know, typically a little bit younger. You know, they were retiring at age 40. Well, as people live longer, again, one of those assumptions, as people live longer, then that was having a significant impact on that liability, because they were having to, you know, they were getting pension payments for 40, 50 years in some cases. So.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Well, thanks. Appreciate it. Okay. We'll have the council liaison comments. You're Winfield.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Just a few things. February 10th, the council had a workshop strategic leadership plan. So this is the strategic leadership plan that has been in place, and so we're looking to update this. The strategic leadership plan tears off the general plan, and if you're not familiar with the general plan, you know, it's on our website. I encourage you to go to it and to at least get somewhat familiar with it. What the council, the direction was essentially that we would stay with the vision that's basically captured in the general plan, which is really a reflection of our community, at least at a point in time. If that changes, we'll be, in fact, we're in the process of developing a public participation plan for the new general plan for the 2026. But we did review the strategic leadership plan. We agreed that we would stay with the vision. I think essentially the goals that were outlined in this strategic leadership plan and the seven focus areas, which one of those is financial stability and sustainability. So just as an example, I think of how important these plans are, one of the objectives was to adopt a comprehensive plan for permanently addressing the town's public safety personnel retirement system, unfunded actuarial accrued liability. So, well, here's the outcome of that. You know, here was the plan, and then we see the outcome. So, what should suggest to all of us is that, you know, these are general plans, strategic leadership plans are important. One of the things that we talked about in that workshop, and you may have tuned in or not. Under the financial stability, sustainability was the objective of looking at other potential revenue sources. So also as part of this discussion is looking at the space needs, for example, of our police department. That facility has been in place before 2000. We've grown significantly and since that time. And so there's some space needs that aren't being addressed by that current facility. So we'll be looking at options going forward. And I think you'll have an opportunity when we have a draft strategic leadership plan to review that and to provide comments, which I would encourage you to do. At our last council meeting, which was February 15th, we recognize outgoing board and commission members, so it reminds me that thanking you on the end. I'll thank you on the beginning. So thank you for your service. I appreciate the time and energy that you give to this commission, to the Budget and Finance Commission. We've certainly benefited from the commission's review of different topics, BSPRS being one of those. There were numerous meetings that led up to that final direction decision. The owner of the steam pump village came forward with they were looking for an adjustment to the master sign program. This was to allow an increase in lettering for some of the outlets in that retail area, not all of them. And so that was approved by council so that some of those signs would be more visible from Oracle Road. We also had a project, a conditional use permit on the southwest corner of La Cañada and Tangerine. This is an area by Lehman School, and the proposal was for a self-storage facility and a retail component. Admittedly, there's low enthusiasm for self-storage because it doesn't generate jobs and it doesn't really generate income.
At least
right?
It's not a Walgreens.
It's not a Walgreens, right. But anyway.
Something else.
So ultimately, it was approved. One of the caveats of that is that they're looking to purchase, I think it's about the entire area, undeveloped areas, I think it's around 13 acres, I could be off, plus or minus. I think they're looking to purchase about half of that and then developing about half of what they're purchasing. And so the other is that they're in negotiations with Lehman. Lehman would purchase that other piece that would be north of this proposed self-storage. Lehman would use it for soccer fields. And the other item that led to, or at least for some on the council to approve it, is addressing some of the circulation issues associated with Lehman School. So there's a road to the west of that development that would connect from Tangerine to the school and would provide some relief, other options. Not knowing where you live, but if you're in that area in the morning or in the late afternoon.
Quite congested.
Yeah, it's probably a place you want to avoid. We also had a conditional use permit at the southwest corner of La Cañada and Naranja. This was for a drive-through proposal. It's part of a larger development proposal for offices. They're asking for a drive-through, essentially for a coffee donut type facility. And that was also approved. And then there was, you had a discussion about the request for increase taking monies from contingency for the La Cañada Road project and the Westward Look Road project that was also approved. For the upcoming council meeting on March 1st, Mr. Gephardt mentioned that Oro Valley Church of Nazarene, they're, as the applicant, they pulled their project. It wasn't anything that the town, so they pulled their project to be presented, that was going to be presented on the 1st. When it comes back to council is their decision, not ours. So I don't know when that will come back to council. The other item that's on there that is the community center, and I think it was back in November, staff came forward with some different options for addressing increasing accessibility to the community center. And so now they're coming back with options again, but with more real-time estimates in terms of the cost of those options. And I think there's been some preliminary design work that's been done. So that's on our agenda, and there's probably some consent items, but I don't remember what they are at the moment. That's my report. Thank you.
Thank you. Any future agenda items? I was wondering, do we want to work on... Do you have one?
Did you?
No.
If we wanted to look at the pension policy and then maybe the next... You want to do that for... Yep. What would be a good time for you to want to address that?
Yeah, we'll pull that up on the next agenda as well, and hopefully have a little more discussion and conversation. Again, just want to kind of get the policy into your hands, and now you can have a chance to review it, hopefully have a foundation to work from there, and bring your thoughts, comments, and ideas to the next meeting.
Any other comments? It's time to adjourn. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn. And a second?
Second.
Second. Okay, so we have a... Everybody motions now. So we have a motion to adjourn from Commissioner Carr and a second by Commissioner May. And we'll adjourn at 5:30. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.